I would like to call this hearing to order. Marco and I were down with Shannon a little bit earlier, and we thought that this nominee, who's going to be introduced briefly by Senator Cornyn, we were thinking that we might be the only senators that would show up. And because of your great qualifications, and we could stream through this, I warned Shannon, I think that's the reason we've got people here is, one, they're fascinated in you, and two, this is the first Tuesday in some time that we've not had a series of votes right after lunch. And I'm going to make the introduction in a moment. But before we get to our witness, I want to acknowledge and recognize, I think, and Angus, you may be able to correct me on this, it's the birthday of the oldest member on the committee, Richard Burr, today. And we want to wish Richard a very, very happy birthday.
I will correct you on that. You're right about the birthday. You're not right about the oldest.
I know. Well, I was hoping that somebody might self-correct that. But Richard, happy birthday. Again, welcome, Ms. Corliss, and welcome to your family. I had a chance to meet briefly Josh and Declan and your mom, Linda, and your brother, Chet. Congratulations on your nomination to be Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Intelligence and Analysis. Welcome also, obviously, to John Cornyn, who's going to take the, after Marco's done, do again an introduction for you. You come to this position as a highly qualified and highly recommended nominee. You're currently the Intelligence Community Executive and National Intelligence Manager for Economic Security and Financial Intelligence at the Office of the DNI. Who in the hell ever thought that title up? It's quite a mouthful. But it is clearly a position of direct relevance to the position you're about to be nominated for and hopefully will be confirmed for. My understanding is that you currently head the IC's activities and assessments relating to economic security, energy security, export controls, investment security, sanctions, the supply chain, telecom, threat finance and trade, including engagements with interagency process and our foreign partners. So we'll probably ask you on each of those subjects today to be expertise. You obviously have come highly recommended by your former boss, DNI Jim Clapper, I understand Dan Coates as well, former HPC Chairman Mike Rogers, and obviously if John Cornyn didn't introduce and recommend that many folks, that's a very, very good sign as well. The fact is, that kind of broad bipartisan support is absolutely what we need in the intelligence community, nonpartisan professionalism throughout the community. And the office that you're hopefully will be coming to, the Office of Intelligence and Analysis, is really, really important. I know you're going to be over at Treasury, but I know when we get to our questions, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the importance of financial intelligence to the IC and what capabilities Treasury's OIA brings to the table, especially as we enter a period of strategic competition with countries like China and Russia. And I've not mentioned this to Senator Rubio yet, but Senator Cornyn and I and most all of us on this committee are obviously very supportive of the CHIPS bill and trying to make sure that we protect our semiconductor industry. I'm reading today from a DIA, some information about a potential American company that may be being acquired by China. This is exactly the thing we need to prevent, and I don't know whether, I'm not sure where that kind of responsibility fits in the overall framework. Senator Cornyn and Senator Feinstein did a good job on CFIUS reform a few years back, but this is still an area that we need, I think, a lot more work on. This whole notion around financial intelligence, follow the money, was obviously a critical component of our fight against terrorism and extremism. I think we're going to have to follow the money in the same way, particularly as we see the emerging challenges that China and particularly the Communist Party of China is putting forward. I think we also, and I'm skipping through some of this because I've gone on a little too long already, some of the effects of the digital yuan, how that plays into the whole power balance, how we deal with Russia from their cyber activities to their use of proxies, and again, the follow the money component, I think, is terribly important. So I thank you for being willing to serve, and a big thank you to all the women and men who served under your leadership in your current position. The vice chairman will now make a statement, followed by Senator Cornyn, and then, Ms. Corliss, you will be sworn in and invited to give your introductory statement. After this, the members' questions will be in five-minute rounds. I now recognize the vice chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Corliss, for being here, for your willingness to serve in this capacity, for your years of service. You have 2 decades of service in the intelligence community and extensive experience in financial intelligence. And this is a department in the Treasury Department that has it's a really critical member of the intelligence community, has a really important mandate, I think one that's become even more important in the last few years. Obviously, within the context of those challenges, I think none is greater at this point. It's widely acknowledged that none is greater than that posed by the Chinese Communist Party. They have a holistic, comprehensive, long-term and committed plan that they're using both licit and illicit means to dominate, particularly global emerging technologies, to displace the United States and ultimately to reshape the rules-based international order to its benefit. They used to hide that ambition. They hide it a lot less these days, and it certainly puts a tremendous amount of pressure on us. So I appreciate your longstanding work on CFIUS. I would be interested to hear a little bit today about how you'll support the efforts to identify and ensure U.S. companies are not providing, not just being acquired, but not providing data, capital, technology, know-how to Chinese state-owned companies and state-controlled so-called private companies that advance the goals of the Communist Party, as I described earlier, through things like joint venture, venture capital, private equity, and other vehicles, which make the tracking of some of these things harder than ever before. I'd be remiss, I know it's not your doing or in your department, but if I didn't once again today for the second time at a hearing express the concern I have with the administration's recent decision to remove the FARC from the Foreign Terrorist Organization list. I'm just deeply concerned that it's going to contribute to a quick unraveling of decades of progress in Colombia and actually goes against the wishes of our democratic partners in Colombia, a very stable ally who we work very closely with throughout all these years. With that, I think the expectation of this committee in a role like the one you will play is that you'll provide the support needed to better inform policy decisions such as these and others, and that it not be driven by political agendas. From all I have seen and read so far, there's no reason to expect that you won't meet that standard. And so, but we're grateful for your willingness to continue to serve, and we look forward to your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rubio. I now recognize Senator Cornyn for a formal introduction.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Vice Chairman Rubio. Thank you for holding this hearing to consider the nomination of Shannon Corliss to serve as Assistant Secretary for Intelligence and Analysis at the Department of Treasury. She's accompanied by her husband and son and her mom and her brother, and we welcome all of you here today. I appreciate the opportunity to introduce her to you briefly. I had a chance to work with Ms. Corliss a few years ago when we were working on reforms to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, as we all know as CFIUS. There was a clear need to modernize the CFIUS process to prevent predatory investments by adversaries like China and Russia from impacting our national security. To close that security gap, Senator Feinstein and I introduced the Foreign Investment Risk Review Modernization Act, now known as FIRMA, and we looked to Ms. Corliss for expert nonpartisan advice. Her tireless work as an intelligence professional was integral to ensuring that we got this legislation right. She provided expertise, advice, and experience to a process that ultimately saw FIRMA sign into law. But her interaction with that legislation did not end there. In her capacity at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Shannon has adeptly overseen the expansion of capabilities within the intelligence community to comply with the requirements to support the updated CFIUS regime. I'm proud of the process we all made together since FIRMA became law, and I imagine Ms. Corliss is as well. She should be. But we all know that the threat from our foreign adversaries has not all of a sudden evaporated. Our adversaries continue searching for ways to undermine the United States and threaten our position as the preeminent global power. That's exactly why we need intelligence professionals like Ms. Corliss in key positions. In a meeting in my office yesterday, Ms. Corliss and I had the opportunity to discuss the importance of export controls and outbound investment reviews, something along the lines that Senator Casey and I have been advocating for. As a way to round out what we began with CFIUS reform, and we look forward to asking you a few questions about that topic. The Assistant Secretary for Intelligence and Analysis of the Department of Treasury plays a vital role in ensuring our continued economic security. At a time when our adversaries are testing American power all around the world, we cannot ignore the economic component of our national security. Ms. Corliss's passion for national security, her work at the ODNI, and her nearly 20 years of experience in the intelligence community, in my opinion, make her an ideal candidate for this position. I have confidence that if confirmed, she'll continue to serve our country with honor and integrity and act in the best interest of our national security. Our country is fortunate to have leaders willing to answer the call to preserve American strength and to serve our country despite the hard work, long hours, and thankless expectations that often accompany such service. Finally, I would be remiss if I didn't mention in my comments that while Shannon is a native of Florida, she did live in Dallas, Texas for a few years as a child, and that makes her a fellow Texan in my eyes, or at least an honorary Texan, and I'm honored to introduce her to the committee today. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Cornyn. I now ask unanimous consent that the many letters of support for the nominee received by the committee be entered into the record without objection. With that, we'll proceed to the administering of the oath. So will the witness please stand and raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear to give this committee the truth, the full truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Please be seated. Before we move to your opening statement, I'll now ask you to answer the five standard questions that the committee poses to each nominee who appears before us. They require a simple yes or no as an answer for the record. First, do you agree to appear before the committee here or in other venues when invited?
I agree.
If confirmed, do you agree to send officials from your office to appear before the committee and designated staff when invited?
Yes.
Do you agree to provide documents or other materials requested by the committee in order for it to carry out its oversight and legislative responsibilities?
Yes.
Will you ensure that your office and your staff provide such material to the committee when requested?
Yes.
Do you agree to inform and fully brief to the fullest extent possible all members of the Committee of Intelligence Activities and Covert Actions rather than only the chairman and the vice chairman?
Yes.
Thank you very much, and we'll now proceed to your opening statement.
Chairman, Vice Chairman, and distinguished members of the committee, it is truly an honor to sit before you today as you consider my nomination for the role of Assistant Secretary for Intelligence and Analysis at the U.S. Department of the Treasury. I am deeply grateful to President Biden, Vice President Harris, Secretary Yellen, and Deputy Secretary Adeyemo for their confidence in me, and also to Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines for her support and encouragement in my decision to accept this nomination. I want to take a moment to recognize several important individuals in my life without whom today would not be possible. First and foremost, my husband Josh. He is the love of my life, my best friend, and the most amazing father to our two children, Declan and Margot. I would also like to recognize my mother and father, Linda and Bill Ratliff, and my brother Chet. Our parents were the ultimate role models. They instilled in us from a young age a sense of confidence that we are capable of achieving our goals and realizing our dreams. My father passed away nearly 10 years ago, and while it saddens me enormously that he's not around to savor this moment, I know that he is with me every step of the way. I would also like to recognize my in-laws, Joseph and Sylvia Corliss, who have truly become like a second set of parents to me. And finally, I would like to recognize my late grandmother, Virginia Mosier Horgan, who passed away on Christmas night of 2020 from complications related to COVID. There are so many more people, family, friends, and colleagues to whom I owe a debt of gratitude for their love and support. My interest in service to country came at an early age. I grew up in Tampa, Florida, near MacDill Air Force Base. I vividly recall watching my father, a television anchor at WFLA-TV in Tampa, report daily on Operation Desert Storm. The conflict and my father's role in reporting it led to many conversations at home about the history of service in my family. This included my great-grandfather's service in World War I, both grandfathers' service in World War II and the Korean War, respectively, and my great-uncle, Colonel Robert Montell, who spent over 30 years in the Army. My uncle served in a variety of Special Forces roles and posts throughout his career, including as commander of the 5th Special Forces Group. He was my inspiration to pursue a career in national security, and he readily indulged and encouraged my growing interest as a child and young adult. This passion for national security led me first to work with the Office of Naval Intelligence and then at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, where I have overseen the provision of broad intelligence support to Treasury, including with respect to Treasury's role as Chair of the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. I am currently responsible for leading the intelligence community's economic security and financial intelligence mission. In short, my team is responsible for ensuring that the IC is postured to support policy customers on issues such as CFIUS reviews, export controls, telecommunications, sanctions implementation, and the rise of digital assets, among many others. The position I am being considered for today, the Assistant Secretary for Treasury's Office of Intelligence and Analysis, or OIA, is perhaps one of the most unique roles in the IC. The Department of the Treasury is the only finance ministry in the world to have its own intelligence component. Though OIA may have been born out of 9/11 and designed to play a key role in the U.S. government's counterterrorism efforts, it is increasingly pivotal to our government's efforts to compete with China and to shore up U.S. economic security and that of our allies. Leading an organization with such a unique and critical responsibility is an opportunity I am eager to take on, and one I feel I am prepared to lead, drawing upon my decades of service to the IC and leadership in the IC. If confirmed to the role of Assistant Secretary, I will strive to ensure that OIA has the human capital and technology resources it needs to successfully execute its mission. Intelligence integration has been a central pillar and guiding principle of my career at ODNI. If confirmed, I intend to leverage that experience and ensure that OIA continues to lead when appropriate and partners with the IC, with IC colleagues always. My entire career has been in the IC, where I am privileged to work with extraordinarily committed and talented colleagues. I never imagined I would have the opportunity to be considered for this role, but I am deeply honored to be nominated, and I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Corliss. And for planning purposes, if any members of the committee wish to submit questions for the record after today's hearing, please do so by 5 p.m. this Thursday, December 2nd. And as usual, we'll recognize members for 5 minutes each in order of seniority at the gavel, followed by order of arrival. Because we actually have got a larger turnout than I anticipated, I'm only going to ask you one question to make sure all my colleagues get in. If there's something they don't get to, I'll get you on a second round. How do we, from your vantage point right now at ODNI, we're supposed to see some of this efforts to collaborate these economic financial challenges and threats we face. How do we make sure we stay up with what China is doing? I mean, you know, cite this case where they're potentially buying into a cutting-edge semiconductor entity here in the United States, and it seems like everything we've done, that should have been red flashing lights. How do we make sure that we don't have gaps in obtaining this information, that we don't have the we have the right tools in place to follow it? You know, where does Treasury, I know from a written standpoint where Treasury OIA fits in, but how do you see your role fitting in with, you know, having had this role of coordination at ODNI? And what do we need to do to improve the product?
Sure, Senator, thank you very much for that question. Thank you again for the opportunity to meet with you the other day. So I think I would offer a couple of points to your question. First, you know, OIA's responsibility within the Department of the Treasury is to identify, deter, and help the help enable disruption of threats to the U.S. financial system. And I think that would come in a variety of different ways. That would certainly come through potential cyber attacks to the financial system, but it also comes to through through efforts to acquire intellectual property, to invest in U.S. companies, gain access to technological capabilities. So I think the role of the role and the responsibility of OIA in this regard is to ensure that it is providing strategic analysis to the Secretary, to Secretary Yellen, and to other senior leadership within the government so that they understand how we see that China is trying to trying to adjust to our efforts to stop their access to technology through efforts like CFIUS reform. Something that I think we all well know is that China is a learning adversary, and while we may make great strides to reform how we are reviewing the foreign investments in the U.S., we should expect that they will try to continue to get around those. So certainly making sure that we have our collection and analysis, our collection and analytic priorities in place, that they are in alignment with what we understand to be the priorities of the administration. But also, too, critical to that is our partnerships with our foreign partners and our private sector partners. Without those partnerships and without the understanding what private sector sees as trends in industry, it'll be hard for us to necessarily get ahead of the problem.
Well, thank you. I would simply say I was out at ODNI recently, and on this subject of China's economic efforts, and kind of asked a basic question about where, which American venture funds are investing in which of these Chinese tech companies. And these were good analysts, but they almost felt like they were just constrained from looking at American enterprise. I mean, this was a question that at a big Wall Street firm, you'd have a first-year analyst to get an answer in, a matter of hours, if not days. So I do hope with your background coming into this role, this is an area we're going to need to beef up our skills and our playing sense. And again, your question about making sure we partner with, or your comment making sure we partner with the private sector is very critical. Vice Chairman.
Thank you again for being here. It's my belief that the Communist Party of China isn't simply a competitor of the United States, but that they're engaged in a zero-sum game, that they seek to grow at our expense and ultimately to displace us as the world's most powerful and influential nation in every realm. Do you agree with that assessment? Do you share that same view?
Sure. Senator Rubio, I see China as perhaps our greatest strategic competitor. We know that they go after U.S. critical technologies using a whole of government and a comprehensive approach. We know that they use the traditional methods such as espionage, but we also know that they work with academia. They leverage the seams in our systems, whether it be the CFIUS reviews or export controls, and they take advantage of those. So I absolutely agree that we are facing a significant challenge with China.
Yeah, and I get that they're a challenge and that they're not our only global competitor or certainly our most. I guess the question really is, are they engaged in a zero-sum game, in your view? You don't have to agree with my view. I'm just wondering, do you agree that they seek to displace us to become the world's most powerful country as opposed to simply being a competitor that wants to reach parity?
Senator, that is a very good question. It's a complex one. And I do think that there is a great reason for concern that they do have an aim of displacing U.S. Economic superiority. And I think for that reason, it's all the more important that OIA make sure that it provides the best strategic analysis that it can to the Secretary, and if confirmed, I will ensure that OIA will do that.
So is there anything in the time that you've been working in that position, to the extent you can divulge it, obviously, in this setting, that leads you to be more cautious about that assessment than I've been? I mean, I've made a pretty straightforward pronouncement, and that is China is involved in a zero-sum game in which they believe either they win or we win, but we can't both benefit. Is there anything that you've seen or come across that gives you some pause in reaching the same conclusion in such terms?
Senator, thank you very much for that question. I think that is probably one that is better reserved for a classified conversation, and I would be more than happy to come back and talk to you and your staff about that question.
Okay. So, all right. So putting aside anything in your work, I just want to be fundamentally clear. You don't, what I just said about the zero-sum game, you obviously acknowledge that that's a concern, and you acknowledge that they're a significant, powerful competitor, but you are not able to say, as I have said, that they're involved in a zero-sum game, at least not in this setting?
So, Senator, I think I would agree with everything that you've just said. We absolutely see them as perhaps our greatest strategic competitor, and they are, at least sitting within my role right now, they are the priority of the ODNI and of the intelligence community in terms of how we are placing our resources and trying to get at the challenge.
All right, let me ask you related to that question. The Chinese laws require companies to turn over information to the Chinese state, and the CCP, you know, is clearly blurring its the military and civilian sector through this military-civil fusion strategy. Given that, is there any reason, is there any meaningful distinction, for example, at this point between Chinese state-owned entities and what they claim to be private companies, given the reach? In essence, no matter how private you think you are, under Chinese law, if the Communist Party tells you, we need your data, we want your information, you have to do this, they have to do it, or they don't exist as a company anymore. At this point, is there any real distinction when it comes to the purpose of reviewing investments and things of that nature?
Senator, if I understand your question correctly, are you asking if there is truly a distinction between the state-owned enterprises and a company that may put itself out as a private
Correct.
Chinese company?
Trillion.
I think that the while there may be some validity to making that distinction, I think what we ultimately have to realize is that the Chinese government has a number of levers over companies that may put themselves out as being private, and there are requirements for to go back to seek certain approvals from the government in order to seek outbound investments in the United States or in countries like our allies in Europe. And so I think whether, I almost wonder to the extent sometimes whether it's a distinction without a difference because of the nature of the Chinese laws, as you pointed out.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you, Ms. Corliss, and I certainly know you've gotten positive reviews for your work. I'm going to start with a question we told you that I would ask you about. Under the Terrorist Finance Tracking Program, the Treasury Department obtains information on financial transactions from the SWIFT company, which is used by thousands of financial institutions to move money around the world. The program has been controversial because the Treasury Department just scoops up the data, meaning it gets information on the personal financial transactions of countless innocent people. More than a year ago, the Independent Privacy and Civil Liberties Board reviewed the program, urged that Treasury do more to protect the privacy of individual Americans. As we indicated before the hearing, what's been done?
I'm sorry, Senator, could you repeat the last part of your question?
We said that we would be asking, given the recommendation from the board more than a year ago, that more had to be done to protect the privacy of individual Americans. What's been done?
So, Senator, thank you for the question. I am familiar with the Terrorist Financial Finance Tracking Program, but it is one that I would need to be briefed on if confirmed upon arrival with at Treasury to better understand how it is used and what OIA's role is in it. That being said, and certainly how OIA would be implementing any of the board's recommendations. That being said, I do want to ensure that OIA, if I'm confirmed for this role, abides by both the spirit and the intent of the ODNI's processes and procedures with respect to handling U.S. persons' information and ensuring protection of civil liberties.
Why don't I let you answer that in writing? Because I did tell you that I was going to ask the question before the hearing. Second question is about following the money. And obviously, we have looked over the years. The previous president spent decades developing and maintaining and relying on financial relationships with Russia. Other administration officials had compromising links to other countries, such as Turkey. And I'm very concerned about foreign adversaries exploiting financial entanglements to undermine our democracy. Are you?
Senator, yes, I absolutely am concerned about that. And I think understanding how money moves gives us insight into the nature of the relationships and how these adversaries might be trying to circumvent U.S. laws, circumvent our sanctions process. If confirmed, that is absolutely something that I would ensure that that OIA continues to do because it is core to their mission. While OIA was born out of 9/11 and focused on countering terrorism threats, We see considerable applicability of that same approach to understanding how China and Russia and other adversaries, such as Iran and North Korea, are trying to use that approach.
Let's be very specific then. I appreciate your answer. As chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and I should note that I believe there are six members of the committee in the room now, so there is a real connection between the Finance Committee, Treasury, and intelligence. And as chairman of the committee, I've long been concerned about the ways in which government investigators are prevented from following the money. Specifically, large private investment funds are a $10 trillion global industry, yet are exempt from most due diligence and disclosure rules that other investment vehicles are subject to. If you're confirmed, will you examine whether private offshore investment funds, like hedge funds and private equity firms, are being used to launder money at scale and potentially evade sanctions or finance terrorism?
Senator Wyden, thank you for your question. If confirmed, I will ensure that OIA will continue to look at a variety of mechanisms for which are used for money laundering, whether it be through mechanisms such as what you just mentioned, whether it may be through the use of cryptocurrencies or other tools.
I'd like a written answer to that question as well, Ms. Corliss. These are hugely consequential issues. $10 trillion, a global industry, to a great extent exempt from due diligence and disclosure rules that other investment vehicles are subject to. I want to know whether you're going to examine those. So I've asked you two questions. As I say, I've heard only positive things about you. I'd like those in writing and under the rules that come through the chair and the ranking minority member. So I'll look forward to that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would echo this issue of investment firms. I think is something that literally only fairly recently have I become aware. You talk about terrorism. You also talk about all the challenges we've tried to deal with, challenging, for example, China. That's all opaque as well. So, Senator Burr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Shannon, welcome. Our paths have had the opportunity to cross a number of times over the years. I don't have questions for you. I just have a few comments. One, it's refreshing to see somebody as qualified nominated for a spot in the intelligence community. And I will say that this administration has held a high standard for anybody within the intel community, and you're at the top of that list. You talk about what was that OI, O&I was created out of 9/11. I can still remember when they